This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
In summary, the agreement that OPEC reduces approximately 1.2 million barrel a day to bring its ceiling to 32.5 million barrel per day, effective 1st of January 2017.
Well, that was Qatar's Minister of Energy, Mohammed Saleh Al Sadr, announcing the cut in oil production by next year. I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani here with me to look at the biggest business stories. OPEC, of course, dominating business headlines this morning. The first output cut deal in 8 years. Now, Ibrahim, I owe you an apology because you were the optimist here. You thought they would strike a deal and I was skeptical, highly skeptical.
No apology needed. Just pay up the bet.
I find it really interesting that you call a rise in oil prices a kind of optimism because this to me is like a tax on consumers, right? But there we go. I think we will have to discuss as to why this is actually good for economies globally.
You know, the OPEC deal has a 14-nation cartel and they control about one-third of the world's oil production. So for them to actually cut, we saw this coming, right? A few months ago, they did say that they might cut, and this is just a confirmation that they will cut 1.2 million barrels a day. It really shows that they are following through on their initial idea. And this does solidify the credibility of the OPEC. Just yesterday, we spoke about OPEC losing its credibility if they don't follow through. I think that question has been answered today.
I don't know how far they can keep to the rules because I'm sure that a lot of people who are not in OPEC, a lot of countries that are not part of OPEC are also part of the deal. For example, Russia, they have agreed to have their own production limitations as well. And some members of OPEC are targeting an oil price of between $55 and $60, which is going to be a very major boost to a lot of economies over the past few years that have been hurt by the oil prices in the doldrums. For example, a country like Venezuela, a country like Malaysia as well, where we have budgeted an oil price in our budget of $45. And now that if it goes 50 and sustains at that level for a longer period of time, then I think this is one of the ways in which it can relieve the finances of these respective countries.
Okay, so if we take off our oil producing nation cap for a sec and then put on our consumer fuel driving cars cap for a second, we've seen that the prices at the pumps have fallen at midnight. I think it fell 5, so it was down 5 cents, now 190 for the month of December for around 95. I guess going forward, we may not be seeing these levels at the pumps because, you know, we might be seeing higher oil prices following this deal.
Yeah, I think how the government calculates the oil price at the pump is based on formula and is lagging what's happening in the oil industry, although it's much better than the old formula, which had a much bigger lag, but now it's more responsive to international oil markets. And I think that it's going to be hard to expect cheaper petrol prices with oil prices going up like that. But bringing it back to the global and international scene, this is also going to be a boon for the United States. People are saying that this will help the economy over there because the U.S. is actually one of the top three producers in the world, producing about 10% of the global oil consumption. So it will help them, and it will also be a boost to all the shale producers over there. All the spigots would start turning on again. And yesterday in the stock market as well, a lot of the shale producers actually jumped up 20% in pricings.
There you go. I spoke to Ben Lebrun also this morning. He said energy counters in Australia also flying this morning, but also just kind of a sentiment, a goodwill sentiment that comes out after the OPEC agreed to this deal, also kind of spilling over to other commodities. But let's move back to the US, where several big stories from Donald Trump have come out in the last few hours. First, the president-elect has tweeted that he's going to step back from running his private business empire whilst he's in the White House. He's going to give us the full details in a couple of weeks. Second, he's named his Treasury Secretary, the man who will run U.S. government financial policy, as Steve Mnuchin. He is a former investment banker from Goldman Sachs. And third, we have high-income households being announced not receiving an absolute tax cut under the Trump tax plan. So here's the incoming Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, saying that talking about his plans for the Dodd-Frank Act and the no tax cuts.
Any reductions we have in upper income taxes will be offset by less deductions, so that there will be no tax, absolute tax cut for the upper class. There will be a big tax cut for the middle class, but any tax cuts we have for the upper class will be offset by less deductions. So as we look at Dodd-Frank, the number one problem with Dodd-Frank is it's way too complicated and it cuts back lending. So we want to strip back parts of Dodd-Frank that prevent banks from lending. And that'll be the number one priority on the regulatory side.
So that was Steve Mnuchin, now incoming Treasurer Secretary. Now, he's in fact the son of a Goldman Sachs partner. So he's had a long lineage in Wall Street.
Yep, he is from Goldman Sachs himself as well. And this is going to be the third Goldman Sachs alumni being appointed as the U.S. Treasury Secretary since the 1990s. And we can see this revolving door and this coziness that exists between the U.S. government and Goldman Sachs, especially. Many alumni have come from there. And I'm just wondering, you know, you can be a very good business person. And of course, you know, Mnuchin is going to speak on behalf of the banking sector. But can you, with your business knowledge, manage an economy? Do you really understand how the economy works? Because as it is right now, people are already talking about the arithmetic challenge of what Trump wants to achieve and how to translate that into laws and how to implement that into fiscal policy. Because with all these tax cuts, it's not enough to fund what they want to do. And that's going to prove very challenging.
And this this worry of yours actually can be compounded because there is another yet Goldman Sachs alumni called Anthony Scaramucci. He is being considered as the top job for Deputy Secretary for Treasury of State. So it's not sure how the Goldman Sachs duo will try to navigate this particular economy.
So if you look at the tax plans that Donald Trump has, corporate taxes would be effectively cut to about 15% from 35%. The estate tax, which we know that nominee Hillary Clinton wanted to impose, that is going to be repealed. I mean, not even increased, but actually done away with. The capital gains tax would drop, and this would be good for the U.S. market. I think the bull run would continue in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And the top rate for business income would fall to 15% from about 40%. So this is the kind of arithmetic challenges that people are talking about with Trump's plan.
Like how he would fund the economy, right? The idea, his argument is that, you know, by cutting taxes, you'll incentivize businesses more to come back to the U.S. to be more productive. I don't know whether we'll be able to see that happen.
Yeah. Overlaying all this, Donald Trump has announced that he will actually leave his business in entirety. In a series of Twitter posts yesterday, he says that there is a legal document or legal documents are being crafted to actually take him out of the business operations, basically pushing the responsibility of doing his the Trump Organization business down to a blind trust or to his children. That's the question now.
Yeah, he's addressing in the conflict.
He's saying that as he had that meeting with Mnuchin's people in the Trump Towers.
In the Trump Towers. Okay, that's ironic. 7:45 right now. After this, we'll take a look at the landscape of corporate Malaysia and we'll get the CEO of Malaysia Airlines to explain the company's financial performance. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.